On a bright, sunny day in Houston, Texas, my wife and I are driving around and we pull up to this neighborhood. But it's unlike most neighborhoods that I've been in before. The thing is, it's not finished yet. There are homes going up left and right, and they're in various stages of completion. Some are fully framed with no drywall. Some look mostly finished on the outside, but the details aren't quite finished yet. You can kind of tell. And there's also large plots of land everywhere just waiting to be developed. It's almost like a neighborhood was just springing to life out of nowhere. So after parking our car, we walk into this nice completed home that looks mostly like a house, but has an office in the garage. This is called the model home. The representatives there start telling us about the homes that they sell, and they invite us to look around. So we do. Everything is brand new, from the floor to the ceiling, and it was pretty nice. I couldn't help but wonder about the company behind this house. And what about the other companies responsible for building all of the other neighboring houses? I had to know more. Find out with me today on Stock Stories. Right. Welcome to the Stock Stories podcast. My name is Alex Mason, and I am your host and stock storyteller. On this show, we decode the business behind the stock in order to help you make better investing decisions. And we also learn about mental models and investing principles in order to complement stock analysis. We're going through the entire S&P 500, and today is one of those such episodes. We're going to be learning about the nation's largest home builder, D.R. Horton. So let's go. When you think about it, what is the centerpiece of your life? That is, your physical life. Where do you spend most of your time? It's your home. Home has many different meanings to different people, but ultimately, it's the place where you and I live. It's where we lay down at night and where we wake up in the morning. You see, my wife and I, we're in the process of moving. Our place is on the market, and by the time this episode airs, we might even be under contract with a buyer. You see, aside from the work that I do on this podcast, I still work as an engineer, and with the environment surrounding the pandemic, I was given the opportunity to work remote full-time. And let me tell you, this has been amazing. This has been a huge blessing for me and my family, and we're super grateful. Now, that being said, I liked it so much that I requested to be remote full time, even after the pandemic is over, and I got approval for it. Now, my wife is a remote worker too, so this opens up a whole new world to us. I mean, we've talked about where we wanted to live and decided that ultimately we want to buy a home in a different state for a variety of personal reasons. And we've owned homes in the past over several years, two condos to be exact. And they've both been old, like really old. For some reason, we've been attracted to this vintage charm that is so often found in buildings here in the Midwest United States. And they're great and all, and they've served us well throughout our 20s. But if we're honest, I think we're ready for something different. We're ready for something new. Now, have you never bought or lived in a new home before? Yeah, me neither. That got me thinking about what investments exist in the new home sector. And it turns out there are multiple large companies that are publicly traded that build houses. So today we're going to talk about D.R. Horton, ticker symbol DHI. Donald Horton was a man from a small town named Marshall, Arkansas. His father was in the real estate business and he also sold cattle. Now, initially when Donald was growing up, he thought he wanted to be a pharmacist. So he enrolled in college out of state, but for one reason or another, things just didn't work out. And he eventually ended up returning to Marshall just a few years later. He decided to join the family business and he got into real estate. Now, in an interview he did many years later with Professional Builder magazine, Donald said that he did really well in the real estate business. However, he became frustrated because the Arkansas real estate season was very slow in the wintertime, and this was an ambitious guy, and he just wanted to work. So what he did is he packed up his bags and left. He said, quote, "I needed more to do in the winter. I wanted to get somewhere that the more I put into it, the better I could do," end quote. So he settled in Fort Worth, Texas, and he got a job working for a local home builder as a salesperson. Now, if Donald was good at anything, it was good at sales. So he was so good, in fact, that on his first day at work, he ended up selling a home. Talk about some good sales skills, right? But over time, Donald recognized there was a major gap in the industry. You see, at the time, home builders sold one of two types of houses. Either they sold very standard homes that couldn't be changed at all, and thus they were pretty affordable, or they sold totally custom homes, which were, as you can imagine, very expensive. So what would happen is customers would ask for changes to their homes here and there as they were being built, and Donald would go to his boss and request the changes to be made, and the boss would always say, well, no, we can't accommodate them. The thing was, if the standard builders allowed changes, it would cost them more and it would eat into their profits. The problem was too that this alienated the buyer that really wanted a few changes, but either they couldn't or they didn't want to pay for a fully custom home. So that was a problem. And according to Donald, this was an area of the market that was clearly underserved. So he decided to do something about it. Donald R. Horton started the company that bears his name in 1978 in Fort Worth, Texas. It was there that he broke ground on his company's first home with a loan that he got from a bank. During construction, the buyer asked for a change. They asked for a bay window to be added to the house, and Horton quoted a price of $500, and the buyer immediately agreed to it. So there he had it. He was able to build his first home with a change. And it wasn't too big of a deal because Donald Horton, he understood the costs associated with making these changes, so he was able to accommodate them. Now, with his first sale on his own completed, he was able to get more loans and he ended up selling more houses and building more houses. So that's how the company was born. Now, during their major growth phase, Horton and the rest of his management team, they had to face the reality that changes requested by buyers would indeed cost more money. I mean, how would they circumvent this problem that hadn't really been solved in the industry up to that time, right? If buyers wanted changes, they were going to have to pay for them. So Horton and the team had to figure out a way around this. The solution around the problem was for them to know exactly how much any change to the floor plan would cost, and then to actually meet that cost when the change was made. Because even for a professional builder, it is easy to make construction changes that end up being over budget or to inaccurately project the cost of a project. Have you ever done a home renovation yourself? Yeah, if you did, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. But the thing was, in Horton's case, it was this attention to detail that helped the company control their costs. And then coupled with Horton's excellent salesmanship, they had nonstop growth every single quarter for many, many years. And I was doing some research on the profitability of his company, and for at least 87 consecutive quarters, D.R. Horton's revenue, homes built, and profits all increased. So this was a company on a very strong upward trajectory for a very long time. And as far as where they were located, they ended up staying in the Dallas-Fort Worth market for several years, and they gained business by expanding slowly. Eventually, 9 years later, in 1987, they decided to expand beyond the DFW area. Expansion was careful, though. The company researched potential new markets for about 3 to 5 years before building there, and they spent some time learning about the features and homes that people already liked and were willing to pay for. And this was really important because imagine being a home builder and trying to go from a market that you already know very well, like Dallas-Fort Worth, and then going into somewhere like Kansas or Missouri or Illinois. Maybe you don't really know what the styles of homes that people like are over there, so you have to do some market research. So D.R. Horton and his team were very careful about how they did their research, and that ended up paying off for them because when they entered a new market, they were actually successful. Now, by 1992, the company went public, and they raised $80 million in an IPO. Now, like their larger competitors, they ended up going on a shopping spree, and they went out to acquire smaller builders across the country. This was a big period of consolidation within the industry, and at this time, there weren't really many national home builders. D.R. Horton sensed a lot of opportunity with consolidation, so that's why they expanded into other markets. Now, by 1993, just 1 year after their IPO, they were the 25th largest builder in the country. But fast forward to the year 2000, and guess what? They climbed their way up to the third largest with operations in 23 states. And they ended up becoming the second largest builder with the acquisition of Schuler Homes, which was a dominant builder in the state of California. Now, the 2000s went on and the housing market was heating up. So in 2006, revenue hit a height of $14 billion. Amazing, right? The U.S. housing market was still going really strong and credit was easy to come by for many who wanted to purchase a new home. Now, there were signs of economic weakness that happened around the year 2007. And then there was a full-out recession that happened in 2008, which many of us are familiar with how that went. In the third quarter of 2007, D.R. Horton actually reported a loss of $50 million compared to a profit of over $270 million in the same quarter just 1 year prior to that. So that revenue of $14 billion in 2006, that fell gradually to just about $3.5 billion a few years later in 2009. So things were hard for D.R. Horton, just as they were hard for every home builder and the general economy. Remember this?
2008 was a year that many investors around the world will want to forget. With plunging home prices and rising foreclosures, the housing problem snowballed into an economic crisis that we haven't seen since the Great Depression, spreading across the globe.
During the financial crisis, the company's revenues, earnings, and dividends, they all fell significantly. And the company was in a rush to offload the inventory and pay off their debt. These were hard times, especially for home builders like D.R. Horton. People just couldn't afford homes anymore because the banks weren't lending. And the banks weren't lending because many previous loans that had been given were in default. There were complex derivatives of mortgage loans that were bundled up and sold as supposedly safe securities, and they were bought and sold on Wall Street and proved to have much less value than a lot of people originally thought. Now, over the coming years, the economic system eventually stabilized with the Federal Reserve buying back massive amounts of bonds in order to stimulate the economy. And D.R. Horton, well, they eventually recovered as interest rates continued to stay low, unemployment gradually fell, and people and banks started feeling more comfortable about buying houses again. So times were good throughout the 2010s, and the company began to leverage their large network to help people buy more and more homes at super low interest rates. In 2011, they sold over 17,000 homes. And by the year 2020, they sold over 71,000. That's a 17% annual growth rate in the number of units built. So not bad for an environment in what many economists have called a muted recovery. Let's learn more about the business itself now. Stay tuned. So that brings us to today. What is D.R. Horton like right now? Well, they're the largest home builder in the United States, and they've built over 810,000 homes since they started out. And in 2020 alone, they sold over 70,000 homes just in that year. So where do they operate? Well, they operate everywhere in the U.S., basically. They operate in nearly every major U.S. market, and they are in 29 out of 50 states. Now, to provide some context of the hottest housing markets in the country right now, the top five housing markets are the DFW area. So that's where the company got started, Dallas-Fort Worth. They're also in Houston, Austin, Texas, Atlanta, Georgia, and Phoenix, Arizona. So those are the top five housing markets in the country. And within those top five, D.R. Horton is actually the leading builder in four out of those five. Also, notice that three out of five markets that I just mentioned are located in one state, the state of Texas. So that tells me that Texans love their houses, especially new builds. Now, more than half of the company's revenue and inventory comes from the East Coast and the southern regions of the country. And the rest of their sales are spread across other regions. So yeah, they are a nationwide home builder, but they tend to focus on the South and the East. The way that the business is broken up is into four different brands. So D.R. Horton has four brands, and they are the D.R. Horton brand, the Express brand, the Emerald brand, and the Freedom brand. So those are their four different offerings. And what they do as a company is they attempt to serve people by building them houses at every end of the spectrum. So they offer homes for as little as $100,000 or somewhere in that range. I haven't really seen homes that they actually offer for that cheap, but apparently they offer homes at the super low end of the range, all the way up to the $1 million range. And their slogan or tagline is a home for every stage of life. D.R. Horton wants to be the company that everybody comes to for their new homes, no matter what stage of life they're in. So D.R. Horton as a brand of home, they're more focused on quality and value, and that's kind of their standard brand. It's the brand that bears the company's name. They also have the Express brand. These are lower price homes that are geared more toward the first time home buyer. And I've been inside some of these Express brand homes when my wife and I were house hunting. And yeah, they're pretty nice houses, especially for what you get. I think the prices for some of these homes were somewhere around $240,000, at least at the time we looked at them. And we were just kind of looking around just to see what there was that was out there. And I was very impressed. I mean, wow, for $250,000, you can get something completely brand new. You can get something that's two stories, three bedrooms, two baths, completely new, everything. And yeah, it wasn't a $500,000 home. It wasn't a $750,000 home. And I was just amazed at how they were able to bring that level of quality for that price. So I was impressed by the value with that particular brand of home. They also have a brand of home called Emerald, and these are their more luxury homes. And then their last brand is called Freedom. This is for the active adult community, which are homes basically for the elderly or people who are growing older. So you can see they have different homes for different demographics, right? They're trying to target different types of people. So for example, the Freedom brand of homes targeted towards the elderly, I mean, those are largely one-story homes. And it makes sense because that type of demographic is more likely to want that than, say, an active family with multiple kids. So they have these different brands that they use to try to appeal to different types of people. And they assist home buyers with every phase of the process related to the home itself. They have things like mortgage services, title services, and insurance services. Now let's walk through for a moment how the home buying and building process works. Because if you've never bought a home before, it's all kind of confusing, right? Like, how does this all actually work? Well, it starts like this. You work with a realtor who helps you locate a specific home and neighborhood. And then in the case of new construction, you're working with a builder because the house needs to actually get built. It doesn't exist yet. Then you apply for a mortgage with a bank. Now you might go through a loan origination company and get the money for the house. And this is what most people do. If you don't have the money sitting there in your investment portfolio or in cash, then you're going to need to borrow it from somewhere. And that's usually a bank. Then you sign with the builder to actually build the house. You sign a contract and say, okay, I'm going to build on this lot. And here's the time frame. And this is the floor plan and style that I want. And then the builder says, okay, I agree. And here are the terms and conditions. And you sign that contract. Then the house actually gets built. And this can take months, of course, right? I mean, you got a lot of things that go into a house. It's not just the things that you and I see when we walk into a home and look at it. There's all the internal infrastructure that actually makes the home modern and functional. Things like the plumbing systems, things like electrical systems, things like drywall and insulation, roofing, flooring. All of these things have to be built from scratch. So it's actually a really big undertaking, but that's what companies like D.R. Horton do, is they are experts in actually building the home. Then finally, the house gets built, and naturally you inspect it as it's being built to make sure that things are up to the right specifications. Then finally, you come to closing, and the title company officially transfers ownership of the house to you at closing. And then you get the keys, the house is yours. Now also, you will want to buy insurance from the insurance company and get a policy to protect you financially in case there's some kind of future catastrophic damage that happens with the house. And usually mortgage companies or banks will require that you buy some kind of insurance on the home. So as you can see, there's a lot of moving pieces, but this is what happens all the time. It happens every day with people who are buying and building their homes. As far as the distribution of home inventory across the affordability spectrum for D.R. Horton, I noticed that they're pretty evenly distributed. So most of the homes that they build cost somewhere between $200,000 and $500,000. That's kind of their sweet spot as far as the inventory. But I was curious as to if this really translated into the distribution of revenue too. Because you see, home inventory is different from home sales, and that's an important consideration. And here's what I found out. Virtually all, as in 94%, of the homes sold in 2020 by D.R. Horton were from either the Express brand or the D.R. Horton brand. And the average sales price, to put this in perspective, it was somewhere around the $300,000 range. So a lot of people bought new homes during the height of the pandemic in 2020. And they weren't buying luxury homes, at least not from D.R. Horton. They were buying entry-level and mid-priced houses. Now, this is an important insight because, to me, if you're buying homes in that range, that tells you that that's really the customer of this business. Those are really the people who are making this company money. D.R. Horton caters to the first-time home buyer, and they also cater towards the, I don't know, I guess you could say the trade-up home buyer, someone who wants a little bit nicer of a home than what would be considered entry-level, but certainly not at the luxury level. So that's really their sweet spot. D.R. Horton is catering toward probably most people. I mean, they're a national home builder and they try to cater their homes to your average family. And that's exactly what they do. When we look at the numbers, we can see that that's what they do. One of the things I was wondering about D.R. Horton when I was studying it was where they actually get the land from, right? Like, how does a new neighborhood actually come into existence? It looks like a big plot of land and nothing's there. Then all of a sudden, a bunch of houses are there. So how does this process actually happen? How does it work? Well, one of the ways that it works is through types of companies that are residential lot manufacturers. And I noticed in the annual report that D.R. Horton owns a majority stake in a residential lot manufacturer called Forstar, ticker symbol FOR. But what does that actually mean? Well, it's a company that buys real estate and then develops it for residential use. And then after they're done developing it, they sell it to home builders. And although Forstar, in this case, is a publicly traded company, they're basically controlled by D.R. Horton. D.R. Horton has stated that they want to eventually deconsolidate them from their financial statements. But effectively, what goes on is this. Companies like Forstar go out, they buy large blocks of land on the open market, and then they work really hard to get that land ready in order for it to be suitable for houses to be built on it. And ultimately, a new community is created because of their work. Now, what kinds of things constitute land development? What does that even mean? I mean, isn't it just dirt and then you just build on it? Well, no, there's a lot of considerations that need to be researched and need to be understood very well before actually building onto a piece of property. And these are things like environmental and soil testing. You know, you need to understand the grade of the land. You need to understand what soil type you're building on. If you're building on swampland, it's going to be very different than if you're building on land up in the Midwest. The soil is physically different. And you also need to worry about government licenses, regulatory hurdles. There are different rules depending on where you're building. Are you building in a city? Are you building in a suburb? Are you building in a rural area? And then also just assessment of the site in general. Are the home builders going to get a good return on their investment building in this particular area? We talked a little bit about the top areas of real estate in America, you know, DFW area, Houston, Austin, Atlanta, and Phoenix. I think those were the top five. Yeah, those are great to know, but within each of those cities, there are so many different neighborhoods and so many different areas. So it's wise to think about what kinds of areas are going to actually be attractive to potential buyers. Are they going to build in an area that's already super saturated with houses where they don't really need anymore? Or are they going to try to go somewhere new where maybe there's a little bit more risk because people don't want to live super far out all the time from different facilities like schools and hospitals and things like that? So assessment of the actual site is really important too. So Forstar is interesting. They've got about $400 million in cash, but their debt has grown a lot to over $640 million. But technically, they're backed by over $1.3 billion in real estate that the company owns as inventory. But I mean, who knows how much this land is actually worth? That's kind of a tricky question to answer. But the basic financials of Forstar, I mean, they look okay. I'm not super concerned about them, but I did find it interesting that they're a separate entity that develops the property, whereas D.R. Horton kind of just buys from them. And it's kind of this pipeline of Forstar going out, getting the land, and then selling it to D.R. Horton, who then builds a house on it and then sells the house and the plot of land to people. It's kind of this interesting pipeline. Let's look now at the financials of D.R. Horton. Are they a sound company? Have they been growing their profits for us as potential investors? Let's take a look. For the sake of comparison, I'll be looking at two different time periods, one in fiscal 2013 and another in fiscal 2020, just so we can understand the major trends of the business numbers. We don't want to get too much into the weeds. We just want to get a basic sense of where this company is going financially. So first, let's start with sales. The company had $6 billion in sales in 2013, and then that increased to $20 billion in 2020. So the company is making a lot of money in sales, and that's really great growth. That's over 18% annual growth in just their sales. So guess what? The profits, they've increased even more. The net income of the business went from over $460 million to over $2 billion in 2020 for over 25% annual growth. And then the good thing for us is that the earnings per share actually grew at the same rate. So it went from about $1.33 to $6.41. So we're getting a business that over the past almost decade has grown their profits by 25% annually. That's really impressive for a large company. But the thing is, this is a business that's very cyclical. And one of the good parts about being a cyclical business is that when times are good, times are really good. And that's certainly the case with D.R. Horton. They've been able to make money hand over fist because more and more people have been buying houses, and people don't just want to buy older homes too. They want to buy the new ones. They want to buy the fresh new ones in the nice new subdivisions that have all the bells and whistles and modern amenities. So that can help explain this income and sales increase. As far as the balance sheet, remember, we have to understand what the company owns versus what they owe. It's all great if they're making a lot of money and they're profitable, but if they have a huge pile of debt or some hidden liability, then that could be a big red flag to us as investors. So let's look briefly at the balance sheet. Well, the company had just under $1 billion in cash in 2013. And then over the subsequent 7 years, they were able to increase their cash balance to over $3 billion. And this is pretty good. This is pretty impressive, I think, for a home builder to be storing that much cash, because most of their money is tied up in the land that they have, the inventory of homes that they have, and they rely very heavily on loans from banks in order to actually sell houses. So this is impressive to me that they've bolstered their cash balance over the past decade. But let's look at the long-term debt. How much debt do they have? Well, in 2013, they had just over $3 billion in debt. And in 2020, it was just over $4 billion. So yeah, the debt has increased, but not as much as you might think relative to the cash flows and relative to the actual cash position. So this was very encouraging to me because, you know, cyclical businesses and large companies in general, they've just been piling on as much debt as they can in the past several years because interest rates have been so low. And that goes true not just consumers like you and me, but also to corporations. Everyone's able to get low fixed rates on debt. And so the fact that they've only increased that debt a little bit is very encouraging to me. And then let's look at the cash flow statement. The cash flow statement tells us how much money was actually moving into and out of the business. So starting with operating cash flow, this is the cash flow that the business itself is generating. They went from just over $1 billion in operating cash flow, negative operating cash flow actually, to about $1.5 billion in 2020. So they kind of reversed their position there. And then their investing cash flow, it hasn't fluctuated too much over the years. It's been in the $100 to $200 million range. And the important thing to note here is that more money actually has been invested in rental properties over the past few years. When I first started studying D.R. Horton, I had no idea that they invested in rental properties, but apparently they do. It's a small part of their business, but they're kind of in the landlord business also. They have this very interesting strategy where their main business is selling homes, but they're also kind of dabbling in the landlord business. But it's not a huge part of their business. They do spend money on managing some rental properties. And then as far as the financing cash flow, this is the money that comes into and out of the business based on things like dividends or share repurchases or anything having to do with debt. It'll show up in this line item in the cash flow statement. So the financing cash flow has gone down over time. It used to be close to $1 billion coming into the business from financing. And now it's about a third of that, less than $300 million. And then as far as dividends, this is a company that pays dividends. And they paid out $60 million in 2013. And that number increased to over $250,000 in 2020. So they've been bringing up the dividends pretty handsomely since the financial crisis happened. Now, what about the per share numbers? Well, the per share numbers are also good. They went from about 18 cents per share in dividends, maybe a little bit more, up to 70 cents per share. So nice increase. And then as far as the shares outstanding, remember, we want to make sure that the company isn't diluting itself too much, because whenever we buy a share, if the company issues more shares, then that means our percentage of ownership in the business proportionally goes down. So that's usually not a good thing for us as individual investors. So we want to see that shares outstanding line item either holding steady or decreasing over time. That's typically what we want. Well, what's happening here with D.R. Horton? They had 330 million shares outstanding in 2013, and it increased a little bit to about 360 million in 2020. So not a huge increase there. They've held pretty steady, which is good news for us. That means they haven't diluted their shareholder base. And then I just want to point out another financial metric that is important. You know, we've talked in the past on the show about return on equity. Return on equity is a measure of how efficient a business is at generating profits, because it looks at the net income the business generates versus the amount of equity they have on the balance sheet. And remember, equity is just the amount of assets minus liabilities. So you and I, as potential shareholders, we technically own the business, right? And that ownership is defined by equity. So the return on equity is the income, how much money the business is bringing in profits, divided by the equity, how much we own in the business. Now, naturally, the higher the return on equity, the better it is, because that means we're getting more income versus the amount of assets that we own. So for example, in a very asset light business, maybe I'm licensing intellectual property or something like that, the amount of assets I'm carrying on my books may be very small, but I may be generating a very high return on equity because I have a lot of income. I'm very profitable. So ROE, that's the abbreviation for it. It's a great measure of how efficient a business is at generating cash over time. And if that number is increasing over time, that's usually a good sign that management is competitive. Management is doing a good job at making sure this is a profitable business. And I bring that up because I like D.R. Horton's ROE. I like their return on equity. It's about 24%, which is great. It's actually really hard to get high return on equity consistently over time because of competition. When competition shows up in the marketplace, they usually eat away at margins, and that can affect the return on equity also. So that's great that they have a great return on equity. Now, there is a component of leverage to this. Again, this is a business that does use debt to improve their returns. But the component of leverage for this company has stayed relatively stable over time, and it's even decreased a bit over the past couple of years. Okay, so now let's bring everything together. We've talked a lot about the business itself, the history of the business. We've looked at how home building works in general. And what did we learn here? What did we learn, and how can we look to the future? What's kind of going on right now in the economy, and what do we expect for D.R. Horton going forward? Well, right now, things are going really well for D.R. Horton. I mean, they're expecting to close on 80,000 homes in 2021. And looking at all the recent numbers, D.R. Horton has a lot going for them lately. They've had this recent buying frenzy of homes around the country, and it's been fueled, I think, by a combination of a couple of different factors. One, there's limited housing supply. There's not a large amount of houses actually available for sale, especially newer houses. And people tend to want newer houses over older ones, especially if they can get them at an equal or better price. So there's that aspect of it. And then also, we're still in a period of historically super low interest rates. I mean, interest rates are still somewhere around 3% or so for a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, which historically is like unprecedented. I remember when my wife and I were buying our first property, and I called my grandfather up just to chat, and I mentioned it to him. And I said, "Hey, Grandpa, what do you think is a good interest rate on the loan?" And he said, "Well, you know, I think if you can get 8% or better, that's a really good deal." And I just kind of laughed because we were in an interest rate environment. And this was back like 7 or 8 years ago, buying our first home, that interest rates were already super low. And we ended up getting a really low interest rate, like below 3% low. And those level of rates have pretty much persisted over the past decade. So that's another factor here, is interest rates historically have not been this low in a very, very, very long time. Another factor that plays into this is people wanting to relocate due to the pandemic. You know, living a life in quarantine, it revealed a lot of things and it impacted many industries, and the housing industry was one of those industries that was affected, but it was actually affected in a largely positive way in many places across the country. And what happened was a lot of people realized in quarantine that they wanted to live in a bigger space. With people spending so much time at home, they realized, well, you know, maybe I should move. Maybe I should get more space. I don't necessarily want to deal with fixing all these problems with my house and seeing all these things all the time. I want to move in somewhere brand new. I want to move into a bigger space. And you know what? That's what they did. And so the demand for new housing has increased over this past year or two. And you know what? My wife and I are two of those people. I mean, we haven't purchased a home yet. We're in the process of selling ours, so we can ultimately embark on a cross-country move. But one of the things that worries us, though, is that these home prices, they've just gone up so much in the past few years. Have a listen.
Welcome to you both. And Daryl, I'll just start with you. What jumps out the most to you about this home price appreciation that we're seeing?
It's just remarkable how strong the housing market is when the rest of the economy is in turmoil. And I think it speaks to how different this pandemic recession is from other recessions in the past. People have changed their relationship to their home, and we're seeing this big game of musical chairs where people are swapping homes to get what they really want.
Looking at the D.R. Horton homes as well as the homes of other builders, it definitely seems like the buying frenzy is continuing, at least in certain areas of the country. I mean, people want new homes, especially the lower price ones that are in the $200,000 to $300,000 range. Those are just going like hotcakes right now. There's still a lot less supply than demand, and the builders, D.R. Horton included, they just can't build fast enough to meet that demand. Interest rates are still super low, and buyers are looking for low monthly payments. So the growth of the company in the past year or so, it's been phenomenal. They literally doubled the cash on their balance sheet in a year due to the intense building activity during the pandemic. I like how they haven't loaded their balance sheet up with debt, though. It's only increased modestly. And also, dividends have been going up. Shares outstanding has been steady, and the cash balances have increased. So what's not to like? Let's look at the valuation, though. The stock trades at the time of this recording somewhere around the $90 to $92 per share mark. In 2020, the company had earnings of $6.41 per share. That gives us a price-to-earnings ratio of just 14 times earnings. Now, it is super important to keep in mind that this is a highly cyclical business. Another 2008, and the company's revenues and profits will diminish significantly. So to me, if you're going to buy this stock, you'd better prepare to hold it for a long time because there's no telling when a recession will hit. And I don't know when that day is, and nobody knows when that day is. But when it does happen, the value of this stock, in my personal opinion, is going to fall significantly. So how do we think about investing in a business like this? D.R. Horton seems like a well-run business in their field, and they have a strong track record of success over multiple decades. They've been doing really great. But like any cyclical, we have to keep an eye on where we are in the business cycle. Particularly, this business is dependent on mortgage loans being widely available to American families. So if there's no mortgages, there's no buying activity. And if there's no buying activity, there's no revenue or profits for D.R. Horton. So I could see this stock returning significant amounts of money to shareholders at the right time if it's in the midst of coming out of a housing recession. The problem is, I don't know when that is. It's kind of like a business like Ford or another consumer-driven cyclical business. When times are good, the profits are raining in, but when times are hard, there are no profits to be found. Now, I really like what I'm seeing with D.R. Horton, but even though the recent past has been amazing for them, I just can't succumb to recency bias and pretend that this business is not in a highly cyclical industry. So if I ever do invest in this business, I'll have to get the timing right. And that's the critical part of the analysis here. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Stock Stories podcast. Everything you hear, aside from a few news clips, was written and produced by myself, Alex Mason. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. It really helps the show out a lot, and that's really how podcasts grow. They grow by word of mouth, so thank you in advance for sharing it. Also, if you want insights into episodes I'm working on before I release them and as I release them, follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, at Stock Storyteller. And there's some links in the show notes. Again, that's at Stock Storyteller. All right, thanks, and I'll see you next week. The information presented here on Stock Stories is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. You and you alone are responsible for your investment and financial decisions. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, or financial advisor that can analyze your specific situation in the context of your goals and circumstances.